intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Maureen McDonald from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the July-August 2019 Walter Magazine. We begin with setting a place. Maggie Kane's unique restaurant model welcomes diners from all walks of life, by Hampton Williams Hoffer. When Maggie Kane first sat down to eat at a soup kitchen in Raleigh, the dining experience was different than what she was used to. When I go to a restaurant, I get to eat whenever I want, have a choice of food, and be served, Kane says. At the soup kitchen, however, resources were limited. The menu, the allotted time, the seating. Meeting over a meal was still the best way to connect with her friends, many who were homeless, that she'd met while volunteering and working at local nonprofits. So she started taking her friends from the soup kitchen out for meals at restaurants. They chose to go to places like Golden Corral or K&W Cafeteria, friendly, casual spots where we would sit for hours, have a meal, enjoy refills, and no one ever told us to leave, says Kane. Everyone deserves that dignity. Based on her experiences, Kane founded A Place at the Table, Raleigh's first pay-what-you-can cafe, where diners enjoy chef-prepared meals from a breakfast and lunch menu that includes items like sun-dried tomato quiche and caprese paninis. If people can pay for their food, great. If they can't, they can volunteer in the restaurant to cover the cost. Since the opening of the cafe on Harget Street in January 2018, A Place at the Table has provided nearly 11,000 meals to people in need. On her 25th birthday, in November 2015, A Place at the Table officially received nonprofit status after numerous trips to the Secretary of State office in downtown Raleigh. One time, Kane went in the wrong door. More than once, she brought the wrong papers. But that's another thing about Kane. She'll keep coming back. If you need someone to meet with you, to hear you out, or help you, and you ask three or four times, they will probably say yes. But if they don't, you just keep moving, she says. Every time Kane met with somebody in those early years, she would ask, who's the next person you can connect me with? A habit that helped her curate a diverse community of support for her cause. These days, 40 to 60 volunteers come through the doors of A Place at the Table every day. It's hard to know who's there for a free meal or not, because plenty of people with the means to pay still choose to volunteer, enjoying the relationships and community they find there. The Pay What You Can model allows diners several payment options. They can pay the full suggested menu price, pay as little as half if needed, pay it forward by buying a meal for someone else, or pay for a meal with an hour of volunteer work in the restaurant, doing things like washing windows or clearing plates. Sherry Henderson, a volunteer, is often at the point of sale, taking orders. Like almost everyone in the cafe, she's passionate about the mission and the community. One part of the nonprofit that Henderson particularly likes is the tokens. Anyone can buy a $10 token to hand out to someone else who needs food, which can then be redeemed for a meal at A Place at the Table. I live in downtown Raleigh and take them with me when walking to events, catching the train, or walking my dog, she says. Henderson once saw a mother and three young children in Nash Square Park on a particularly hot summer day. The foursome had been staying in the park for days, so Henderson shared tokens with them and pointed them to the restaurant, where they met Kane, who gave them more tokens. Like many families battling homelessness, This family was transient and soon moved on, but while in Raleigh, they had a place to eat, to escape the heat, to sit, to be served, and to feel human. In late fall, A Place at the Table plans to complete their expansion of the cafe into the space next door. The new addition means everything can get bigger. Menu, seating capacity, employment, and impact. Perhaps the best upgrade will be to the kitchen. Right now, Chef Andrew Gravens works his magic with rudimentary amenities. Think a waffle maker and a sandwich press. And a single, small oven with no hood, arriving at 4 a.m. alongside his sous chefs to get cooking. A Place at the Table's 9-person team, each of whom gets health insurance and is paid a living wage, contributes to the exceptional food and service. We don't just want to be one of the best pay-what-you-can cafes, says Kane. We want to be one of the best cafes, period. Kane says Graven's work in the kitchen has been transformative. A Place at the Table is as much a part of Raleigh's booming culinary scene as it is a destination for people who are food insecure. Her favorite menu item is Smiling Eggs Benny, a take on Eggs Benedict that finds the poached eggs over a Belgian waffle with maple hollandaise and a bacon smile. Now at 28 years old, Maggie Kane has solidified a name for herself in both the nonprofit and Raleigh food scene, racking up a slew of awards, including the Triangle Business Journal's 40 Under 40 Award and the Thad Ure Jr. Memorial Award, which honors an individual who has made a significant contribution to the Wake County hospitality industry. I want people to know that this is not just me doing this, says Kane with modesty. It is Raleigh that made this happen. Everyone who dined, donated, volunteered, and brought their talents. The people who come every week, they are the ones who make this happen every single day. A Place at the Table is thriving with a diverse array of diners, and Kane herself is usually a feature at one of the outdoor tables where she greets most diners by name. She arrives at 7 each morning and spends her days in meetings, planning for the future of the bustling cafe she wasn't sure would ever be anything more than a dream. There are doctors in scrubs sitting at the community table, next to a man who sleeps outside, who is chatting with a businesswoman on her laptop. Everyone has to eat. Everyone wants to eat, Kane says. So why not do it together? Community just makes life better. This article was edited for Time. And next up, Building a Beacon by Catherine Curran, a partnership between the YMCA, Wake County, and Southeast Raleigh Promise creates support in an underserved area. On the morning of August 26th, 357 children will wake up for their first day at a brand new school. But Southeast Raleigh Elementary School is not just any school. It's different. Created as a public-private partnership between the YMCA of the Triangle and the Wake County Public School System with the support of Southeast Raleigh Promise, this pre-K through fifth grade facility is adjoined to a new branch of the Y to offer not just education, but wraparound services to families that live in the Rock Quarry Road, Southeast Raleigh corridor. The first of its kind in North Carolina, YMCA of the Triangle CEO Doug McMillan says that this partnership has been years in the making. 6 years ago, a new vision crystallized. YMCA of the Triangle board members, community leaders, and neighbors challenged us to provide opportunities for all in Southeast Raleigh and to think bigger than just a new YMCA facility. For decades, this area of Raleigh has been widely underserved. The unemployment rate is 50% higher than the rest of Wake County, as is the number of single-parent households. Plus, the reading level of children is much lower than the city's average. Southeast Raleigh YMCA Executive Director Dexter Herbert says that this initiative is just a step in the right direction. It's been coined the Beacon Site, describing its one-of-a-kind role in guiding this community forward. We want to close the gaps of inequity and injustice. We want to engage and support and appreciate the diversity in people's age, race, gender, income, and education. YMCA of the Triangle's Senior Regional Vice President John Mills says that while the YMCA owns this land, a whopping 32 acres, it takes an entire community to get something like this done. The project is a lot bigger than just the Y. When we refer to it as the Beacon Site, I think everyone has made a commitment to be innovative and think creatively. While we've had programming in this area of town for decades, this site allows us to serve more people in a more tangible way. The school's incoming principal, Cheryl Fenner, was born and raised in Southeast Raleigh, and she says she feels a special connection to this place. I'm a product of Wake County public school system. I grew up in Southeast Raleigh, so there are a lot of allegiances to this area. I believe that with the YMCA addressing the health and wellness of our community, we can't help but to help the entire city of Raleigh thrive, says Fenner. It will help create a more balanced society in Wake County. While the innovative facilities will lead to learning and wellness, Herbert believes that it's the people who interact with the space, from students and teachers to fitness instructors and Y members, that will make this project a success. The Y's mission statement, after all, is, "We build people." I'm most excited to bring communities together. Proximity is key. Get people in proximity, then they get involved. And involvement leads to relationships. Relationships lead to empathy. Herbert says it's not just about donations and showing up. It's about getting people from different backgrounds interacting with one another. He says to stay tuned for exclusive programs offered only at this branch, designed in part to draw people specifically to this Y in this neighborhood from other parts of Raleigh. To me, this is a place that will represent what we as human beings are supposed to be to each other and for each other, says Herbert. By 2020, the Beacon campus will also include 120 units of affordable housing, sponsored by the Downtown Housing Improvement Corporation. That happens to be the exact number of short-term rental rooms that were formerly at the Alexander YMCA on Hillsborough Street before its 2015 renovation. The development, Beacon Ridge, will include 1, 2, and 3-bedroom apartments that offer much more than just housing. Natalie Britt, DHIC Vice President of Real Estate Development, says that this is a family property, taking advantage of its unique location and directing focus to kids and a family's overall health by connecting families and individuals to the resources and training that lead to a healthier lifestyle. To that end, 75 seats across grade levels will be reserved at the elementary school for its younger residents. But Britt says the goal is to provide wraparound services for the entire family, not just the child. I'm most excited about being able to follow the kids and families to see the progress that they make in school or health goals. Stable housing is just as important to better health as it is to education. Fenner agrees, as family is also a focus of the elementary school. Teachers and staff have already met with many neighborhood families and will continue to keep them deeply involved throughout the school year. Because this is a new model in Wake County, the team expects it to evolve as they go. They're still figuring out, for example, the best ways to incorporate volunteers and interact with the community at large. This is not traditional for us, says Herbert. It's appreciating how all these things interact and mix together. I hope we can learn and benefit from people from all walks of life. A healthy Southeast Raleigh is a healthy Raleigh and a healthy Wake County, Herbert says. The sharing of space, sharing ideas, the intentionality behind how we serve the teachers, students, and their families, as well as the membership base, is all wrapped up in that. The culture we create together at the Beacon site is going to be the most important piece to this initiative. If we can create that culture here, the future is bright for everybody. This article was edited for Time. And in Noted, North Carolina Museum of Art Marketing Director Marjorie Hodges describes a mind-shifting voyage to Black Rock City in Bringing Home Burning Man. The phenomenon known as Burning Man began on the summer solstice in 1986 when artist Larry Harvey erected an 8-foot-tall wooden sculpture of a man on a beach in Northern California, then gathered friends to watch it burn. From those humble roots, Burning Man is morphed into a global event that attracts more than 70,000 people every year. The site has also shifted to the vast Black Rock Desert, about 120 miles north of Reno, Nevada. For a few days, 7 square miles of an ancient former lake bed, now known as the Playa, transform into Black Rock City, the temporary home of Burning Man. There, a community of artists, technologists, and designers collaborate to create a public space filled with art, contemporary culture, music, merriment, and more. Many people go to Burning Man for the all-night parties and music, but I was drawn by the prospect of seeing nearly 200 large-scale art installations in the Black Rock Desert. It's a totally blank canvas, with miles between each work to breathe. Art and community are my passion, so I hope to be inspired and bring innovative and collaborative ideas back to North Carolina. Many internationally known artists participate every year, including my friend Hank Willis Thomas, a conceptual artist who works primarily with themes related to identity, history, and popular culture. Hank describes Burning Man as, quote, the most amazing, terrible experience you'll ever have. It's lonely, dusty, hot, you're dehydrated, nothing goes as planned, and that's when it happens. You realize that everything you don't like about a situation is because you haven't done enough creatively to change or creatively accept it, end quote. And so it was that late August 2018, I dropped my daughter off at Emerson College in Boston to begin her freshman year, then rushed back to begin the journey to Black Rock City, a place that's intentionally remote and not on the way to anywhere. Once on site, the world changed. I'll admit that as a brand new empty nester, I was feeling a bit emotional as I approached the funky Welcome Center. They checked me in and immediately required a dust angel. So I found myself flat on my back, working my arms and legs through the thick, talc-like dust that is central to the life on the Playa. But getting dusty early was a good idea. It eliminated any thought of staying clean. A bus ride toward camp revealed the first look at the remarkable city built on desert wilderness. Every imaginable form of shelter, from tents to RVs to tarps, serves as home for the tens of thousands of burners who survive for a week in this completely inhospitable environment. Towering above the tents, the art, the scale of each work, and the scope of the playa created an otherworldly viewing experience. Thomas's stunning installation, All Power to All People, was monumental, a 25-foot-tall Afropic sculpture to honor and celebrate cultural identities of the African diaspora and symbolize community and comradeship. The metal sculpture was interactive, large enough to climb on. Another noteworthy installation was the Orb, the much-anticipated project by Danish architects Bjarke Ingels and Jakob Lang of Bjarke Ingels Group, served as a beacon in the desert, both day and night. The 85-foot diameter inflatable sphere was designed to hover over the burners, reflecting the expanse of participants and the desert itself. The Long View, A Polar Bear Stands in the Desert, by Santa Fe, New Mexico artist Don Kennel, was a surprisingly lifelike 36-foot-tall polar bear molded from discarded white automobile hoods. The towering sculpture seemed to look across the boundless vista of Black Rock City. This installation was designed to encourage the long view as it relates to thoughts on climate change and survival. These three were just a few of the works by emerging artists from all over the world. Beyond the art, I was inspired by the sense of community. Geographic difficulties, extreme temperatures, and an absence of electricity and infrastructure require strong collaboration among strangers. The conditions on the playa were harsh. Temperatures soared over 100 degrees during the day, then fell to the 40s or 50s by sunrise. During the evenings, wild fur coats were common, but in the heat of the day, the dress code was, well, anything or nothing, from stylish and sexy to dystopian or bare. These unusual conditions add to the surreal, almost alien experience. Burning Man was not a vacation, it was a mind shift. The unique and harsh setting, the thousands of fellow burners living outside of convention, the music and the art, were starkly different from my hometown reality. The principles of Burning Man, decreed by Harvey in 2004, including inclusion, self-expression, and civic responsibility, are intended to be a radical, and yet they're adopted for a week by thousands of humans who have never met. Simple and profound, the experience was a reminder of what we all can do if we make an intention to live creatively, cooperatively, and peacefully, even back here in Raleigh. This article was edited for Time. And in Happening Now, Preserving a Legacy, Lisa Simone performs at NCMA. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life. For Nina Simone's historic birthplace in Tryon, that is, celebrate efforts to preserve the legendary singer and civil rights activist's local-ish roots August 17th with an evening of feel-good Simone classics performed by her daughter, Lisa Simone, at North Carolina Museum of Arts Theater in the Museum Park. The legacy of Nina Simone is North Carolina history, says Tiffany Tolbert, Senior Field Officer at the National Trust for Historic Preservation, NTHP, one of many groups partnering to present the concert. We want to connect people across the state to her. Connecting through music is a Simone family trait. Daughter Lisa Simone has made her own name for herself as an award-winning actress and jazz vocalist. She was on the original cast of both The Lion King and Rent on Broadway. earned a Grammy nomination as part of the band Liquid Soul, and co-produced the Oscar-nominated Netflix documentary about her mother's life, What Happened, Miss Simone? This time, Lisa Simone takes the stage to support the rehabilitation of her mother's childhood home in Western North Carolina. Last year, the NTHB designated the site a national treasure, one of only two in North Carolina, and less than 100 nationwide. Since then, the North Carolina African American Heritage Commission, NCAHAC, has led the charge to channel a lot of love and effort and support offered into this legacy space in order to preserve it, says NCAAHC Director Angela Thorpe. Restoration of the circa 1930, 660-square-foot house began in April, and in May a group of visionaries and engineers met to imagine a creative next use. It might be a community arts center. It might be an artist's workspace. Plans are still in the works, certain to demonstrate how art and preservation practice can combine to honor her legacy and inspire new generations of creators and preservationists, says Tolbert. Preserving and activating places like the Nina Simone Childhood Home uplift stories of African American achievement and bring those stories to life. The concert anchors Nina Simone Weekend at NCMA, presented by the Museum, the NTHP, the NCAAH, the North Carolina Arts Council, and Come Here North Carolina. Proceeds from the event, which also include music masterclasses, other performances, and a documentary screening, benefit rehabilitation of the Nina Simone Childhood Home. For tickets and more information, visit ncartmuseum.org. Also in happening now, Sunflower City. Dorothea Dix Park sets acres abloom. A crowd favorite is back at Dix Park, a sea of sunflowers. For the second time, the city of Raleigh has planted thousands of the perky plants on a five-acre field at Dix Park off of Hunt Drive, open for all to enjoy from dawn to dusk. Catch the sunflowers while you can. Peak bloom is from July 4 to July 17, and the flowers will be visible for about a week afterwards. Popular time to visit is just before sunset. For more information, visit dixpark.org. We've run out of time for today. We hope you've enjoyed it. This is Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as TriangleReadingService.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.